Is this working? I don't. I was teaching Megillas Rus to Rabbi Blau's group, and I told him something, and there was no response. So I will say it over again. Maybe it'll come out better. In Rus, in the beginning of the second parak of Rus, it says, "Onami moda lo isha ishki bar chayil mishpachas Elimelech u'shmo Boaz," that Nomi had an acquaintance through her husband, through her dead husband. Her dead husband's name was Elimelech. He died in Chutz La'aretz, right in the land of Moab. And this moda lo isha was an ishki bar chayil. Right, and he, this is what it says in the pasuk. He was an ish gibor chayil, which means he had unique qualities. But you know that one of the ingredients in prophecy for a person who becomes a prophet is, according to the Gemara in Shabbos, that he's a gibor chayil. Mi mishpachas Elimelech, he was from the family of Elimelech, the dead husband. Ushmo Boaz. So Rashi says, Rashi in Megillas Rus, Rashi says Moda, in other words, somebody, a known, a person who's known in the family, they knew of him. Korov ben Achiv shel Elimelech Chaya. He was the son of the brother of Elimelech. So he was Elimelech's nephew, and Nomi was married to Elimelech. I mean, really, they're not related at all, Nomi and Boaz. But Boaz was in her husband, her late husband's family, and so he's called Moda. He's called like, he has some relationship to them. Not a real relationship, but there's some relationship. And then Rashi continues and quotes a Gemara in Bava Basra. Omer Rabbi Sein. The Gemara says, the Chazal say in turn, Elimelech v'Shalmon avi Boaz, uploni almoni hagoel. He says, the Gemara says, these people, Elimelech, who was the husband of Naomi, who died, right? Elimelech, and Shalmon avi Boaz. Shalmon, he had two names. Was the father of Boaz, and the person who's called Ploni Almoni. Later on in chapter 3 in Rus, you know that they go to do Geula. There's some kind of redemptive process that's going on by which the property that would have gone to Elimelech now goes to Naomi through Boaz. Boaz marries Ruth. It's all very, I know it's complicated, but it's hard to understand exactly what halachic processes are going on. He says, but these people, Elimelech Shalmon and Ploni Almoni, the Avi Naomi, right, and Naomi's father, are all Bnei Nachshon ben Aminadav. Now, Nachshon ben Aminadav is the one who saved the Jewish people. Nachshon ben Aminadav was from the tribe of Yehuda, and he saved the Jewish people by jumping into Yamsuf, right? He saved the Jewish people by jumping into Yamsuf. And he says, and this family that we're talking about is the family of Nachshon ben Aminadav. All these people who are involved, Elimelech, Naomi's father, Boaz, Ploni Almoni, all of these people were related, and they were all the children of Nachshon ben Aminadav, the loho ilu lahem schut avotam. And for some reason, loho ilu lahem schut avotam. They were not able to depend on schut avotam. on the merit of their fathers, so that they lived a difficult life. Naomi's husband died, and then her sons died, and she had to use this trick to get back the property that was coming to her. And there were all these difficulties that they had. And the Gemara says, Lo ho'ilu lehem schut avotam, betzeitam min ha'aretz l'chutz l'aretz. Because they left Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz l'aretz. Who left Eretz Yisrael? Who left Eretz Yisrael? Elimelech, Naomi, and their two sons, Mahlon and Kilion. They went to Eretz Yisrael, they left Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they didn't have Schut Avot. Now it's not clear what the connection, you could say, leaving, the idea was here, these people are so well connected, they come from such an important family. How is it that so much distress befell them? How was it that Mahlon the Kilion had to die, that Elimelech had to die, that Naomi was alone, that Ruth somehow managed to cling to her? I mean, this whole story seems to be appropriate to people who are not in the mainstream, who didn't really understand what the Torah wanted of them. But here we say they knew. They were from the family of Nachshon ben Aminadav. So I remind you that the parasha of Behar is the parasha that introduces us to, not introduces us, because already in the parasha of Mishpatim there was mention of Shemitah. But the parasha of Behar is the parasha of Shemitah. And Shemitah, whatever the reason for Shemitah is, whatever the reason that Shemitah was determined by the Torah to be a necessary component of life in Eretz Yisrael, there's no doubt that Shemitah presents economic difficulties. It's difficult not to work for a year, and then essentially you don't work the year after that either. And you didn't really work the year before that too much either, because you didn't plant. So that means that out of a cycle of 7 years, you have three difficult years. There are three economically difficult years, and it's hard to understand why the Torah thought that this is what you should, that this is what we should do. But the Torah addresses this question in Perikov Hey Posikov. The Torah says, "V'chi tomru manochal b'shana hashviis." So if you come and you'll say, in the course of events, what are we going to eat on the seventh year? What are we going to eat? Hein lo nizra v'lo neso v'dvoseinu. We're not going to plant the seeds, and we're not going to collect the wheat. So, in other words, what's the question? What's the question? The question is that this system of Shemitah coming once every seven years is simply untenable. If you're an agricultural society and if you eat what you grow, it's inconceivable that if you take a year off and don't grow anything, that everything will be all right. Everything will not be all right. It'll be terrible. So along comes the Torah, and the Torah says this, "Tzivisi es birkosi lachem b'shana shishit." There's a promise. And God promises that on the sixth year, the harvest will be a harvest of bracha. Bracha, what is bracha? It means abundance, more than you expect, more than is ordinary. V'asisa asatfua l'shalosh shanim. And then there'll be enough for 3 years, because 1 year you don't plant. The next year you plant, you have to wait till the thing grows in the third year. The third year you just harvest. So all this time you're eating, right? All that. So you'll have enough, so much. In the sixth year, you'll have enough for the sixth year, and for the seventh year, and for the eighth year, until you get, you know, until stuff starts to grow. V'asisa es ha'tfu'ah l'shalosh shanim. So here we have an interesting factor. The Torah says that you have to keep Shemitah. So okay, so you have to keep Shemitah. But the Torah furthermore says, right, what Torah says more than that, that you have to believe that keeping Shemitah is going to be good for you. In other words, if you don't believe that the sixth year is going to be a year of bracha, then you can never keep Shemitah. You never keep because you're going to always think that you're killing yourself, that you're going to die as a result of keeping the Shemitah. So that along comes the Torah and says that Eretz Yisrael is an interesting place. Eretz Zovas Cholav Udvash. Right? Eretz Zovas Cholav Udvash. What does Zovas mean? It flows. What is the image of flowing? That you don't run out of it. It's always there for you. But you always have as much of it as you need. That's Zovas Cholav Udvash. But Cholav Udvash is not all that sustains us. We also are sustained by what we plant in the ground, Zri'ah. What's the difference between Zovas Cholav Udvash and Zri'ah? What's the difference? Zovas Cholav Udvash, that's Gan Eden. And Zriya is after Gan Eden. Lama Zogar Nochamo. Zovas Cholav Udvash means there's a Gan Eden quality to Eretz Yisrael. What does that mean? What's a Gan Eden quality? It means it's all there for you. You don't have to do anything. Zovas Cholav Udvash. It flows with milk and honey. Where does the milk come from? Coconuts. What? Maybe olives. Maybe. It was like, it's there. Where's the dvash come from? Okay, so where are the dates come from? They're there. Like, did you ever see anybody grow a date tree? How long does it take to grow a date tree? Long time, right? A long time. So it's like they're there. They're there. It's like you're like planting cashews or something, you know? Like you plant them and you never eat them because it takes too long. So like they're there. So Eretz Yisrael has a Gan Eden kind of quality to it. But it also has a post-Gan Eden quality to it, right? What was the post-Gan Eden quality? What happened post-Gan Eden? What was it that the people had to do after Gan Eden? They had to work. They had to plant. And they had to sow. And they had to reap. So that's what Eretz Yisrael is. Eretz Yisrael, there's Gan Eden. And there's after Gan Eden. So when it comes to Gan Eden, Eretz Zolas Cholav Udvash, that's the divine promise. But when it comes to the Zriya, when it comes to what you plant in the ground, so what's the difference? So what's different about planting in the ground in Eretz Yisrael and planting in the ground after Gan Eden? What's the difference? So planting in the ground in Eretz Yisrael, according to the Chumash, is done. From the vantage point of Emunah. What is Kotz V'Dardar? Remember the Kotz V'Dardar? In other words, the Torah itself says that when you plant, the results are going to be uneven. Kotz V'Dardar Tatzmiach Loch. You don't know what's going to come up when you plant in the ground. You could do everything. You could take care of things. You could be as kind of devoted to the process as imaginable, and still, what are you going to get? Kotz v'dardar. It was Eretz Zovas Cholov Advash. That's a promise. But Zra'im, there's no promise about Zra'im. You just plant. It works out, it works out. If there's a drought, it's not going to work out. So what did the Shemitah do? What did the Shemitah do? The Shemitah turned Zriah into Gan Eden. How did the Shemitah turn Zriah into Gan Eden? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised us that if we do 1 year, if we take 1 year off, if we let the land lie fallow for 1 year, then the other years will be years of bracha, and we'll take care of the seventh year. In other words, Eretz Yisrael negates the punishment to Adam HaRishon of Bezeas HaPecha Toch HaLecha VeKotz V'Dardar Tatzmiach Loch. It was the punishment. The punishment that Adam HaRishon received when he was kicked out of Gan Eden was uncertainty. You can work, and you can try, and you can plant, and you can do all the fancy stuff that you have to do, and you still don't know what's going to happen. Along comes HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, if you keep Shemitah, then all the don't know what's going to happen, all the uncertainty of existence is going to be funneled into that year. They say, instead of diversifying the non-bracha over all of the years, you have it in 1 year. And if you'll come and you'll say, okay, but that's not good enough. Very good that all that 6 years are going to be good and 1 year is going to be bad, but what am I going to eat during that 1 year? Is that also included in this bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael on the Shemitah year? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says yes. V'tzivisi es b'rchosi l'chem b'shana ha-shishis. That the 7 years, all 7 years, will be an antidote to the kotz v'dardar tatzmiach loch. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that if you agree to have 1 year that the earth, that the land should lie fallow, and therefore all of the klalot that devolve upon man would be consumed by that 1 year of the land lying fallow, that all 6 years will be years that are Gan Eden-like, because the planting will always yield harvest, etc. But beyond that, there'll be a bracha that what you grow in the sixth year will be good for the seventh year. So that Eretz Yisrael is Gan Eden. Eretz Yisrael is Gan Eden. The only ta'ana, the only thing that changes that, the only thing that makes it hard to understand, is that sometimes there's a famine in Eretz Yisrael. The first famine that we heard about in Eretz Yisrael was the famine that took place with Avraham Avinu. Vayihira of Ba'aretz, there was a famine. And what does Rashi say? Rashi said that this was a nisayon. What is a nisayon? An extraordinary event that does not change the rule in the long run. What was the extraordinary event? It was a famine. What was the nisayon? To see if Avraham Avinu would return to Eretz Yisrael. But when the famine occurred in the time of Yitzchak Avinu, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to him? Gur ba'aretz hazos. Don't leave. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Yitzchak Avinu. Why not? Why shouldn't he leave? What? No, but Avraham Avinu left, and he got the food, and he came back to Eretz Yisrael. So why shouldn't he? Yeah, that's what Yitzchak's question was. Yitzchak's question was, shouldn't I do what Avraham Avinu did? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him that the famine is not real. Like, what is a famine? A famine, if you run away from a famine, well, you still have a little food. You still have food to eat them. You run because you're scared. You're scared about what's going to happen tomorrow, what's going to happen the day after. So Yitzchak was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the famine, the existence of a famine, should not drive him out of Eretz Yisrael, because Eretz Yisrael is still Gan Eden. It's still Gan Eden, even if there's a famine. And so, when Elimelech, so now, who is Nachshon ben Aminadab? Who is Nachshon ben Aminadab? He caused, or he was the reason that Am Yisrael got to Eretz Yisrael. It was Am Yisrael was standing before Yamsuf, and they didn't know what to do. They were going to just stand there forever. So Nachshon ben Aminadab said, no, we're not going to stand there. We're going to go to Eretz Yisrael. That was Nachshon ben Aminadab. So that the Schus Ovos only exists. The Schus Ovos only exists if you follow in the way of the Ovos. In other words, I can claim, I say, look, I want Schus Ovos, but I can't claim Schus Ovos if I go contrary to my Ovos. If I have Ovos who are Shomer Shabbos, and somebody, their children are Rachmana Litzlan Machale Shabbos, so you can't say, look, I'm a Chalal Shabbos, but I'd like to get a good seat in Olam Haba, because my father was Shomer Shabbos. That doesn't make sense. What you could say is, what a person could say is, look, I'm Shomer Shabbos, but I'm not on the level of my Ovos, but I'd like to connect to them. I'd like to connect to them somehow and get the schus that accrues to me through connection. So the Gemara in Baba Basra says an interesting thing. When Elimelech and Naomi and their sons left Eretz Yisrael, they severed their ties with schus Ovos. The Ovos, Nachshon ben Aminadav, are the ones who brought them to Eretz Yisrael. By leaving Eretz Yisrael, even though it was a famine, right? Even though it was a famine, because by that time, by the time of Elimelech and Naomi and etc., they should have known. What should they have known? What was perfectly clear? That Eretz Yisrael was Eretz Zovas Cholov Udvash, which means that it will always be Brocha. That the Fata Morgana of existence is the famine. And those sometimes things are bad. The economic situation is difficult, etc. But the real situation is Gan Eden. And that's why the impression that you have from reading Megillas Rus, the impression you have from reading Megillas Rus is that only one person left Eretz Israel. Right? Boaz was there, and Ploni Almoni was there, and Salmon was there, and Naomi's father was there. Only one person left. So when you do an act that contradicts, in essence, the position of the Ovos, then you can't claim, and you claim Schus Ovos. And that's why Boaz is called Moda. Moda means she knew about him. She had some knowledge of his relationship to Elimelech, but he had no obligation, because Naomi had already cut herself off through Elimelech from Eretz Yisrael, and therefore she had to reapply, so to speak, for this Chus Avos by proving to everybody that her new connection, she and Rus, the connection to Eretz Yisrael, was a kind of a solid and a new kind of connection. So Eretz Yisrael represents Gan Eden, in the sense that it's Zovas Cholav Udvash on the one hand, and on the other hand, Shemitah is what enables me to say about Eretz Yisrael that when I plant, it always comes out good, right? So it always comes out with a bracha. It's true, I still have to work, but it's not the kotz v'dardar tatzmiach lach. That's not part of the Eretz Yisrael ethos or the Eretz Yisrael experience. So that the mitzvah of Shemitah, the mitzvah of Shemitah, is what makes Eretz Yisrael into Gan Eden. Because I think that the Kotz V'Dardar is somehow sublimated into the seventh year. The seventh year generates added bracha, where you get something for nothing. Right. In other words, you work the same amount in the sixth year, but you get enough food for the sixth year, the seventh year, and part of the eighth year. as well, so that that is all getting something for nothing or getting food without investing in the food. This is all, that's all Gan Eden. That's what Gan Eden is. It's the ability to get it without doing it. And that's what the emunah, right, the belief of the Shemitah year is based on. So have a good Shabbos tomorrow. The Levaya will be at 10:30. I hope that more of you than less of you will be able to make it their business to attend. Strauss has been generally very kind to the yeshiva and has been very helpful, and I think that it's not just him. There are four children who are coming tomorrow with the Aron. All the speeches were already made, I think, today in New Jersey. So I think that it won't take the Levi won't take much time, but I think it is important that people should attend. When is the bus going to leave? 9:30. If you don't go with the bus and you don't know where Sanhedrin is, you can ask.
How do we get there?
How do we get there? I don't know.